being bid you welcome, express appreciation for your being here. We're to assemble together and give God worship and praise as a congregation. So, I mean, saw this in a bulletin about how Mother's Day began. It says a lady named Anna Jarvis, she passed away in 1948. She first suggested the national observance of an annual day honoring all mothers because she'd loved her mother so dearly. At a memorial service for her mother on May 10, 1908, in Grafton, West Virginia, Miss Jarvis gave a carnation, her mother's favorite flower, to each person who attended. Within the next few years, the idea of a day to honor mothers gained popularity. Mother's Day was observed in a number of large cities of the United States. By May 9, 1914, by an act of Congress, I always like that phrase, an act of Congress, President Woodrow Wilson proclaimed the second Sunday in May as Mother's Day. He established the day as a time for, and it's in quotes, public expression of our love and reverence for the mothers of our country. So that's how it began. Whether you're a mother or not, I know that every lady here mothers somebody. Could be a nephew, a niece, it could be, you know, children in the neighborhood, it could be some of the children even. I know every lady is mothers somebody. When people ask Christine how many children you have, she usually replies, "We have four boys." She includes me as one of the boys she's raising up. I know when our boys were younger, we always told Jim and Sharon that if anything ever happened to us, me and Christine, they would get the boys. So when each of our sons turned 18, they celebrated their birthday more than us. They were glad, oh, got it out of that one. One more. We're going to talk about mothers in the Bible this morning. Mothers as an example for mothers or ladies to follow. You and I know you're familiar with either most of these or perhaps all of them. What I'm going to call attention to is Hannah. By the way, my notes are in the back of your bulletin this morning if you want to follow along. And I list her because she looked at motherhood as a gift from God. A gift from God. Here's the story. It's in 1 Samuel chapter 1. I'm going to begin reading at verse 8. And I'm going to read more verses than what you have in your notes. But 1 Samuel chapter 1, beginning at verse 8. Referring to Hannah. So Elkanah, her husband, said to her, "Hannah, why do you weep? Why do you not eat? And why is your heart grieved? Am I not better to you than 10 sons?" Doesn't have any children. So Hannah rose after they finished eating and drinking in Shiloh. And by the way, Eli the priest was sitting on the seat by the doorpost of the tabernacle of the Lord. Hannah was in bitterness of soul. She prayed to the Lord. She wept in anguish. And she made a vow and said, "O Lord of hosts, if you will look on the affliction of your maidservant and remember me, not forget your maidservant, but give your maidservant a male child, I'll give him to the Lord all the days of his life." Well, verse 19 continues the story. They arose after a certain time. So they arose in the morning and worshiped before the Lord and returned and came to their house in Ramah. Elkanah knew Hannah, his wife, and the Lord remembered her. So it came to pass in the process of time that Hannah conceived and bore a son, saying, "Because I've asked for him from the Lord." Well, Hannah did fulfill her vow to the Lord. After Samuel's certain age in 1 Samuel chapter 1, verse 28. It says, she said, therefore, I've lent him to the Lord, or loaned him to the Lord. In chapter 2, verse 11, they went to their house at Ramah, but the child ministered to the Lord before Eli the priest. So Hannah said, God, can you give me a child? And when it happens, I'm going to name him Samuel, because I've asked him from the Lord. There's a story even earlier than that with Adam and Eve. In Genesis chapter 4, verse 1, it says, Adam knew Eve, his wife. She conceived and bore Cain and said, I've acquired a man from the Lord. In Genesis, a story, another one. In Genesis 33, verse 5, I don't have these in your notes, is there? But Esau said to Jacob, who are these with you? Jacob said, they're the children that God has graciously given me. Children from God. In Psalm 127, verse 3, it says, children are a heritage from the Lord. From the Lord, again, that phrase. Grandchildren are from the Lord, too. But mothers in this first illustration need an attitude that says, I have a precious child from God. And I want to raise him in a manner in which that child wants to give himself or herself in service to God. That's what Hannah said. God, you give this child to me. I'll be sure he is in service to you. You see, as mothers, you haven't just brought a child into the world. You've brought a soul into the world. Don't take the Lord out of raising your children. You've received them from the Lord. That's what the example Hannah gives. Number two is Jochebed. If I didn't have it in your notes, you might be wondering. But Jochebed taught her child, and that's Moses, to love God above the treasures of a king's court. The name Jochebed is only mentioned twice. But however, her success as a mother is revealed over and over in the pages of the Bible, in the story of Moses. By the way, Jochebed's husband, Moses' dad, is just mentioned by name. I don't know if you remember Moses' dad, Jochebed's husband, Amram. Bible trivia question. But Jochebed, the mother of Moses, and in the text that Frederick read to us this morning, there's times in the Bible that tells us about Moses that he's something special. In Exodus chapter 2, verse 2, after his birth, it says, she saw that he was a beautiful child. In Acts chapter 7, in the New Testament, when Stephen is standing before the religious leaders and retelling this Old Testament story, he says, at this time, Moses was born and was well-pleasing to God. And then the Hebrew writer that was read to us in verse 23 says, by faith, Moses, when he was born, he was hid 3 months by his parents because they saw that he was a beautiful child. And they were not afraid of the king's command. Well, remember the king says, I'm going to kill the baby boys. I don't want it because you heard it. Israel's going to have a new king. Oh, we can't have that. So as the story continues, you know, the parents of Moses hid him in the bulrushes. And Pharaoh's daughter was going to that area and washing, and she found Moses in the bulrushes. And they needed a nurse for Moses, so she said to one of the maidens, could you find a nurse for me? And the maiden went and found Jochebed, Moses' mother. So Jochebed raises up Moses in Pharaoh's house. And then as the result of Jochebed's teaching, it's found in the verse again that was read to us in Hebrews chapter 11. By faith, Moses, when when he became of age, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. Moses, where'd you learn to do that? Oh, my mom. Mom taught me. 40 years in the house of Pharaoh. Oh, but mom's teaching. So when I was of age, I refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. I choose rather to suffer affliction with the people of God. And I esteem the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures of Egypt. And then it gives two reasons. Moses, why? How could you make that decision? For he looked to the reward. For he endured as seeing him who is invisible. All that Bible teaching? Yeah. Jochebed, you did well. Because when Moses was of age, he said, this is the choice I'm making now. So Jochebed provides an example of attitudes that we need to instill in our children. That when they get older, and they may be in a king's house, but I'm going to stay on God's side. I'm going to stay there. Jochebed, well done. Well done. The third example I give you is Noah's wife. She instilled in her three sons principles of right living in a wrong world. Boy, that's what brought on the flood, just the wretchedness of the world. And God saw that and he says, oh, I'm going to make a change. So Noah's wife, her name is not mentioned. Just Noah's wife. But I'm going to give her credit for raising her three sons correctly. When it's Father's Day, and I give a Father's Day lesson, then I'll credit Noah for giving, for raising up the sons correctly. But today's Mother's Day. Name is not given. Noah's wife. It's kind of an oh, by the way, for the brethren here. If you're ever introducing Christine to somebody, don't begin with, this is the preacher's wife. Introduce her as, this is Christine. And then, oh, by the way, her husband is the preacher. But Noah's wife? Christine, yes, she's the preacher's wife, but don't introduce her that way. But three times, it's Noah's wife, is that phrase, Noah's wife. In Genesis 7, verse 13, on the very same day, Noah and Noah's sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth, and Noah's wife, and the wives of his sons with them, entered the ark. In 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 20, when Peter, the New Testament, Peter recalls his Old Testament story. It says, the long-suffering of God waited in the days of Noah, while the ark was being prepared, in which few, that is, eight souls, eight, were saved through water. In 2 Peter, in chapter 2, verse 5, it says that God did not spare the ancient world, but saved Noah, one of eight people, a preacher of righteousness, bringing in the flood on the world of the ungodly. Ah, Noah and his wife, the three sons, and their wives. Eight? Eight saved? Out of a world of people? Noah preaches for 120 years in Genesis 6, verse 3. 120 years. And seven outside, plus himself, eight. Eight are saved. Peter said in 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 4, said in regard to these, and Peter had his own people in the Gentile world, the wretchedness of them in mind. Peter says, in regard to these people that don't behave rightly, they think it strange that you do not run with them. They think it's strange if we don't run with them. And they're speaking evil of you. I think it's strange that they don't run with us. That they don't run with righteousness. That's strange. I think that's strange. And they're looking at me and us, and they're saying, no, that's strange that you worship, you have Bible study, You pray, you minister to one another, you grow in grace. They're all looking, that's strange. And I look at them, no, that's strange. That's strange. Number four is Mary, mother of John Mark. I use her as an example because she put the church first in her life, in her home. Apostle Peter has been put in prison for his faith. Then he's delivered out of prison by an angel. And the story is in Acts chapter 12. And in verse 12 it says, so when he had considered this, he's out of jail now, he came to the house of Mary, the mother of John, where many were gathered together praying. The one time, the Bible describes the mother of John Mark. It describes her house as a gathering place for the brethren and a place of prayer. Of all the places that Peter could have gone when he got out of that prison miraculously, he goes there. No doubt, I have to conclude that Mary's house was well known as a gathering place for the brethren. And that Mary's house, the mother of John Mark, was a place for prayer. I wonder what my home or our home is known for. Mary, the mother of John Mark. Peter, what are you going to do when you get out of prison? I'm going to go to Mary's house. Brethren are gathered there. And they're praying. That's what I'll do. The fifth illustration is Lois and Eunice. They taught their children the Word of God. In 2 Timothy chapter 1, verse 5, Paul says, when I call to remembrance the genuine faith that is in you, Timothy. Oh, but it first dwelt in your grandmother Lois and in your mother Eunice. And I'm persuaded that it's in you also. In 2 Timothy chapter 3, verse 14, Paul says, oh, continue in the things which you've learned, Timothy, and the things that you've been assured of, knowing from whom you have learned them. From a childhood, you've known the Holy Scriptures, which are able to make you wise for salvation through faith, which is in Christ Jesus. Generational faith. And that's what we want. We want generational faith. And that's the example of Lois and Eunice. Lois gave her faith to Eunice, who gave her faith Timothy. My dad instilled in, I had two brothers, so the three of us boys instilled faith in us. Well, instilled faith in our three boys, and now our grandchildren. Yeah. Christine's parents, Daryl and Wilma, instilled faith in those two daughters, and likewise with our grandchildren. I look at Sharon, look at the faith of her mother, Nancy Marcus. Yeah. And Sharon. Kane, her mother. Lane.
Allie,
Jane and Allie. Barbara and Nicole. Vincent, Susan and her daughters. But the faith was in Leela. Susan's mom. See, Paula and the faith. What's your wife's name? Robin. Faith there. Look at Sylvia and her family. Generational faith. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Candy and Jamie. Generational faith. Look at Pam. Generational faith. Grandparent, grandmother, Nan. Still faith in Audrey. That faith is now in Pam and in Amanda. You look at Carol,
faith was in her mother, Elaine, and Carol, and her children, grandchildren. Look at Faye and Orby. Faith in their children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren. Generational faith. That's the example that Lois and Eunice give. So when we look at these biblical mothers, there's examples for us, all of us. So teach the children. Because if you don't teach your children, the world will. The world will teach your children or our children through the music they listen to, through the movies they watch, or the television programs. They'll be taught by their friends, by their teachers, their coaches. They're going to be taught. And if we, as mothers, and that includes dads too, if we don't teach God to our children, our silence will teach them that God is not important to us as parents. If Christine and I didn't teach our three boys, they would have been taught that God was not important to us. We need mothers who will follow the example of these Bible mothers. Mothers of faith are among the most important influences in America, in our lives. I want to close with this. I don't know who the author is. The title of the poem is God's Loan. The word God is, our children are from God. Here's what it said. I'll lend to you for a little time a child of mine, he said, meaning God, for you to love while he lives and mourn for when he's dead. It may be 6 or 7 years or 22 or 3, but will you, till I call him back, take care of him for me? He'll bring his charms to gladden you, and should his stay be brief, you'll have these precious memories as a solace for your grief. I cannot promise he will stay, since all from earth return. But there are lessons taught down there I want this child to learn. I've looked this whole world over in my search for teachers true. And in the crowds that throng life's land, I've selected you. Now, love, not think the labor vain, nor hate me when I come to call to take him back again. It seems to me I heard them say, dear Lord, thy will be done. For all the joys thy child shall bring, the risk of grief will run. We'll shelter him with tenderness. We'll love him while we may. And for the happiness we've known, forever grateful stay. And should the angels call for him, much sooner than we planned, we'll brave the bitter grief that comes and try to understand. God's alone. Just as we had number one with Hannah. When you receive a child, you receive that child from the Lord. So be sure the Lord is in that child's life. Be sure. That's one example of these that I've given you today. Always at the close of a lesson, we sing a song of encouragement, song of invitation, song of exhortation. There's one here this morning, I'm a member of the New Testament Church. Never been baptized for a remission of sins. We provide that opportunity. Jesus gave his last words right before he ascended back to the Father. In Matthew chapter 28, the closing verses, all authority has been given unto me in heaven and on earth. Go into all the world, make disciples of all the nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, the Son, the Holy Spirit. And lo, I'm with you always, even to the end of the age. Mark records it in Mark 16, verses 15 and 16. Go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. He that believes and is baptized shall be saved. And that's the invitation we extend, always at the close of a lesson. You're subject to it. If That's your desire. That's your resolve. Simply let it be known at the close of this song. So let's make your way to the front here. Let's stand. Hymn of invitation.